Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Happy New Year, Jen.
Happy New Year.
Back in the groove. Back in the New York groove.
I'm feeling 2017.
Are you? We're just a few days in.
No, already I love it.
And really?
We have so much to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm undecided. The jury's out, but, you know, I'm open to it.
It's the year of fat mascara. Are you kidding me?
Oh, definitely. That's for sure.
All right. In this episode, we're going to get dirty to start off the new year and talk about pollution and skincare. Then a big beauty lawsuit.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, we'll get into the details. And finally, are luxury salons a thing of the past?
Are they?
I don't know.
And later, we chat with SoCal beauty queen, Wendy Zomnier, founder of Urban Decay. Holy cow, she's in the studio.
My personal midnight cowboy.
Dirty.
Okay, so Jen, one of the more memorable events of Q4 of 2016 was this Dermalogica event, and it was about this thing called the Daily Superfoliant.
Okay.
It was like a little scrub, and the idea was that it was going to sort of detox the skin from daily pollution. Now, pollution is like this word that I hear.
I'm giving you the biggest
eye roll ever.
Wake up.
Okay. Every time I go to an event, like every third skincare event lately is about pollution.
Totally the buzzword du jour.
As a New York City girl, when you walk out the door, do you feel like you need to put on like a shield, like a Jason mask to like protect yourself from pollution?
I just expect like cancer is growing on me at all times in so many forms. And this whole detox thing, I'm just like, no.
Yesterday.
I cannot get on board with it.
Honestly, there are so many bigger concerns for me than like air pollution. No joke, like 3 weeks ago, a man, I was walking down 23rd Street, like some kind of like grifter type, literally screamed into my open mouth.
Why was your mouth open?
I was talking and a man just ran up to me and was like, ah, like screamed so loud. I stood there shocked. It was terrible.
What did he smell like?
It was an assault on all the senses. I literally almost went home and like cried.
Do you think Dermalogica microfoliant would have saved you in that situation?
No, drinking bleach would have saved me. So, but back to
anti-pollution skincare. Yes.
Yeah. So what is in this stuff? I paid attention at the event, but like across the board, you're seeing it too.
Yeah. We did a story on this like 2 years ago, I think, is when the trend really got started. I think it's a lot of marketing hype. I'm not going to lie. There was a study in 2010 in Germany that showed women who lived closer to cities and streets had more hyperpigmentation and worse skin than women who lived in like the country. And then you could see all the little manufacturers get their wheels spinning. Mm. And what's the product, you know, how long does it take to get a product out? About maybe 2 years after that, it started. And now it's become mass, all these anti-pollution products.
But what if you just use something with like antioxidants? Like, isn't that like eating away at the same stuff?
I think there's two things they keep talking about.
Like the free radicals?
Yeah, one is free radicals, which are what are in soot from cars and all that. The other one is that PM 2.5 particulate matter, that really small soot. Clarisonic had this big study about how like they get it out of skin better than anything else. So there's two different kinds of pollution there. But if you wash your face, as we've learned, with regular cleanser and water, that would remove a lot of that particulate matter. And if you wear something with antioxidants, that will protect you from the, you know, the free radicals that are also causing aging.
So it sounds like your best bet if you really want to fight pollution is a nice cleanser, maybe get an antioxidant product.
Yeah, because I was looking into some of these products thinking maybe I'm missing the point. Maybe there's something else going on with the anti-pollution. But every single product that came out, there's a Murad overnight detox mask. There's this Whey golden root anti-pollution mist. The Epiance pollution-proof cleanser. And what was the one that you had, Dermalogica?
Dermalogica's new daily superfoliant.
So every single one of them is then calling out different ingredients that they're saying are anti-pollution, and they all seem to be antioxidants. Mm-hmm. So I really feel like it's a lot of marketing. And one other thing I looked into, you know, dermatologist Dr. Whitney Bowe?
Yeah.
I interviewed her recently, and she was saying, honestly, anything you put on your face, even if it's just a plain moisturizer, acts as a barrier to this stuff.
Oh, that's comforting.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. If you have like a shield, like you said, like a shield over your whole face and body, that stuff's not getting in there. So, I mean, antioxidants are great. And if you like these new products, I'm all about it. It'll get you to use antioxidants. They're anti-aging, so that's good. But I do feel like the whole name of it as being anti-pollution is a little bit playing into the hype. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
That said, if I had this Whey anti-pollution mist and that guy came up to me.
Oh my God.
Just like
get a hose.
Squirt it in his eye like some, what is that spray called?
Mace?
Yes, mace. There you go. Are you fancy, huh? Are you fancy? Just when I was a baby beauty editor who first got to New York, my boss sent me to Fekkai, which I called Frederick, but it's Frederic Fekkai. And I remember walking in there and being like, oh my God, I'm in Beverly Hills, like I've arrived, golden things, like Angel sang, and like there were luxury robes, and it was this big factory of luxury.
Someone brought you water?
Someone brought me, no, I didn't get water, I got champagne.
Champagne.
Okay, you know, you're 22, I'm like, free drinks at the salon. It was amazing. I have since gone so far away from that whole world. Now I go to like a grungy downtown salon where I like put on a white, they don't even have the robes, they give you a black t-shirt to wear so you can be like cool and
a
hip.
Black t-shirt?
Yeah, that's the robe. Oh my God. The salon experience has changed so much, don't you think?
You know, it's so interesting you say that because I too remember there were like these big mega salons, you know, Fekkai, John Barrett, Louis Licari. I remember, I mean, this was before my time, but Kenneth, I remember growing up being like, oh my God, you know, Jackie O went to Kenneth. Kenneth is in New York. And I just read some, you know, really interesting news that after 13 years, so it's certainly not as established as the Fekkais of the world, but after 13 years in Flatiron, Ted Gibson just closed his salon.
I know. I've done so many makeover stories over the years at that salon with readers.
So, yeah, he was a very big deal when he came out on the scene. He was one of the stylist to charge, you know, like megabucks. I think his going rate now is $1,500.
Oh, yeah. Remember when Sally Hershberger had like the, you know, $1,000 haircut or whatever?
Exactly. So Ted.
It seems dated now.
Yeah. I think that's kind of, you know, what we might be getting to. Like, so Ted, you know, he worked with Angelina Jolie. He's a, you know, a big deal hairstylist, and he had to have the salon that, you know, bared his name. But
it doesn't suit his business anymore. He talked about in Women's Wear Daily the different challenges of owning a salon. He hinted at Matt, or more than hinted, saying that managing millennials was a problem, which I thought was kind of funny. He's evolving with the times, and there's sort of a question mark as to what the future of, you know, Ted Gibson's business looks like. So, you know, time is evolving. Even like Orlando Pita, his salon is kind of a quiet salon where he's still, you know, is commanding big dollars, but it's not like, welcome to my world. It's not about that big branding and flashiness, that Sex and the City kind of lifestyle.
Yeah. You know what it makes me think of when Anne Gottlieb told us about the fragrance industry? She said,
what do you mean?
The younger women today, they don't want to be marketed to and be a part of this big machine of something sold to them. And I'm part of the, you know, whatever brand's world. They want it personalized. They want something that they can make their own. They want it to be more intimate. They want it to be cooler. And that is all part of the reason I think these big salons are closing, and even the big names like Ted Gibson are starting to do something smaller and also maybe not bring on such a huge staff, because you want it to feel more personal.
Yeah, it's actually thinking about like what Michael Gordon did with Hair Story. If you go back to one of the earlier episodes, you know, he talked about it's about like, instead of the big like Bumble factory, he has a few chairs in like his like studio, and there isn't like a big entrance. You go up, like, you know, you have to make an appointment. It's kind of like hush hush, and you have this like one-on-one intimate experience with the stylist.
But you feel like you came out of there with a haircut nobody else has.
Right.
It's not like Vidal Sassoon and everybody looks the same when they leave, you know?
And you're not going there to be seen.
Right.
So, you know, this is very much like a New York, LA type of thing, or a big city kind of thing. But it's interesting how the hair culture is changing. So
I think it's happening in smaller cities too. Like, you're not going to see those big, huge salons anymore. I personally am not. I mean, I'll miss the free champagne, but I'm not going to miss the whole all lined up in a row, who's here, and like, you know, cattiness of that kind of salon.
No, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good sign of where the culture is going.
Well, best of
luck. I'm optimistic.
Yeah,
I'm optimistic.
Best of luck to Ted in his new endeavor.
What do you think of this cockamamie garbage about the St. Ives class action lawsuit?
That was a loaded leading question. I think you're referring to the fact that these two women, one in New York and California, just brought on a law firm to sue Unilever because they say St. Ives apricot scrub ruins their skin and is false advertising, among many other claims.
I want to know what they do for their day jobs. So guys, if you're listening, please let me know what you do for your day jobs.
Okay, so I looked into this a little bit. I don't know what they do for their day jobs, but the law firm that they have does a lot of cosmetic class action lawsuits, and there have been more and more of these recently. This is just one example.
This is why people hate America. Go on.
Well, it's because of California, too. They make it easier now to make these lawsuits come about. But so they are suing for $5 million because they are saying the product says it's dermatologist tested, but then they're quoting all these dermatologists they read in skincare articles saying you shouldn't use a product like this because it has walnut shells, which are not round particles, which are jagged edges, which could potentially damage your skin. I was thinking about all of the insane number of things that could potentially be damaging to you other than this product.
However many people, it's a lot, that like get punctured by mascara wands when they stop short in a taxi cab. Or, like in their eyeball.
Yeah, there's a million.
Or chemical exfoliants that are left on too long. Leave your glam glow on too long. I'd like to see what happens.
I actually love St. Ives scrub. I used it in middle school. I think I used it more on my body than my face, though. They don't really say if it's for face or body, but have you ever used it on your face?
Yes, and I had a pack in a tube in my cupboard that was unused, and then this whole thing happened, and I was like, let me go try it. Like, I used to use it when I was a teenager.
Let's remember how rough it was.
Yeah, and I was, you know, and I remember some people being like, oh, like, it's too rough, because obviously some milder scrubs have come about since, usually those with microbeads, which we know are now, like, absolute garbage for the environment and going to be outlawed if they're not already.
Already, yes.
2016, right?
Yeah.
So I went back to it, put it on my face. It's fine. Like, you know, I was reading the stuff in this lawsuit. You know, it says like somebody compared it to like sandpaper on your face. One of the dermatologists compared it to sandpaper on your face.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this dermatologist has ever put sandpaper on their face or used the scrub, because it's like neither.
But this is why I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but like this lawsuit is full of hyperbole. I was looking at the I read it. Of course I downloaded the class action lawsuit and read it. The footnotes are full of like stupid bloggers writing stuff that like would never hold up in court. Like if you're quoting, you know, sage skincare guru Barbara Strickland, the Acne Sage Advice website blog, as one of your pieces of evidence that it's not good for you, you're going to have a problem on the stand.
And I could call up five dermatologists right now and get them to say anything about, you know, a skincare product. Like, those are just five different opinions.
Yeah.
And also, dermatologists are not product formulators. Like, yeah. So they don't.
I think their case, though, is that it says it's dermatologist tested. But again, this is, you know who told us this? Nikita Wilson. She said it depends on your skin type. So obviously for some people, this might not be the best product. It could be a little more sensitizing because they're not perfectly round spherical exfoliators. But why didn't these girls like use it once and be like, oh, it's not for me.
It's not for you. Don't freaking sue someone because it wasn't like your type. If I have a, you know, if I try on a lipstick that's not my color, am I going to be like, Revlon, you said it was the perfect red. Do you know what I mean?
That's true, actually.
Also, dermatologists
really fired up.
Just because it's stupidity, and this is just like so dumb. And I've seen the way this is caught a life online with people who don't know any better, or they're believing what, you know, they say, oh, it's being sued. There's a suit. There must be something wrong with this. What if this concept applies to other things? I mean, this is a large company that, thank God, has like the money to lawyer up, and like, I really hope they squash this in 2 seconds and make
it's
a fool.
But,
and it's just this kind of careless, like, dumb, like, kind of thinking that it, like, gets a new life online, and then I hear people be like, oh, this is bad, this is good. It's like an idiotic way of thinking. It's not so much about the scrub. It's this kind of attitude that pisses me off. But back to the dermatologist tested thing, do you think Unilever's stupid enough to not have dermatologists test this? So it's like, yeah, you can have five different dermatologists test it, and I'll have five different opinions. Like, I don't understand how it gets to this point and how lawyers can like do this and like spend their time doing this, or these two people think that this is
I
like a fun thing to do with their time.
I think the cosmetics industry is just opening itself up to class action lawsuits because of California, and we're going to see a lot more of these. Because think about it, if you're a lawyer who has big money, lots of beauty companies do, so they're going to go after them in any way they can, even if it's a kind of asinine lawsuit like this, in my opinion.
Yeah, so
I'm going to keep using it. I'm fine.
Keep using it.
My face looks fine.
Guys, like when you hear stuff like this, just like really, don't get in a panic right away.
Tweet us.
Listen for the next episode.
We'll take care of it.
Yeah, if I haven't had like an absolute heart attack yet. the water's safe.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff. With real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence.
Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Holy cow, guys. This is really like Jen and I having a teenage dream. Wendy Zomnier of Urban Decay is in the house.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me. You know I've been wanting to be here for a long time. Just never in New York at the right time.
And you've always been on our list as like the guru who we want to bring into the studio.
We literally had a spreadsheet when we first started that had like people we want on the show, and Wendy Zomnier was at the top.
Totally.
Oh, I'm
not
super
joking.
Flattered.
Not joking. You are a global brand. Everyone knows. I mean, we're going to get into just how big Urban Decay is. But, like, where did it begin? Like, how did it start? And, like, why did you come up with that name?
So funny you asked about the name because people always ask about the name because they're like, why would you name a cosmetic brand that? And it got started. I mean, I've always been a makeup junkie. I have these stories about, I tell people, I was sent home from school when I was 13 for wearing too much makeup. And I'm from Texas. So if you're sent home from school in Texas for wearing too much makeup, like you're wearing a lot of makeup, right? You're wearing a lot. And I think my son is 14, and I can't imagine like my own self at that age where like putting all that makeup on. Like he's such a like sweet innocent, and clearly I was not. So it started. I met a woman named Sandy Lerner. She had started Cisco Systems, which you know we all know Cisco, giant company, and. She really was kind of bummed that the prestige makeup world was just pretty boring at the time. I mean, there was no Sephora. There was no Ulta. It was only big, huge brands that, you know, are still out there, but they weren't doing anything really crazy innovative. Like, Mauve was a crazy color story at the time.
This was the early 90s?
This was the mid-90s.
Mid-90s, okay.
And so we set out to kind of just shake up the industry. No one was doing anything like that. And we were like, why can't there be like great purple eyeshadow that's blendable and smooth and beautiful and amazing, like crazy weird lipsticks? Like I used to wear this like light blue lipstick around all the time and get all kinds of compliments on it. And I never understood like why wasn't that available?
What were you doing at the time like for a job?
I was in marketing and advertising. So I worked at an ad agency basically. And I loved it. I loved the whole idea of like creating ideas that spoke to people and the whole idea of being immersed in popular culture and understanding that. Mm-hmm. But what did fall short for me was I wasn't making anything. And I do always remember as a kid, like telling my mom, like, I want to make things. I want to make things when I'm older.
Yeah.
And so it was just a natural extension for me to go from like, I want to make things to loving makeup to meeting Sandy and her wanting to do this makeup vision and her having done Cisco really showed me, like, I never had anyone in my life before that showed me, like, you can just start a company. Like, you can just go do this thing. And so, you know, kind of together, I was really excited to be able to learn from her and say, let's just do this. So we put Urban Decay out there. And the name comes from Sandy's husband at the time, Len, is this total computer genius. And we were like, it should be urban something. And he's like, call it Urban Decay. And it just stuck because we were really trying to say, it's not about fitting the mold perfectly. It's about doing something differently. It's about finding beauty in whatever it is, in your face, in other people. It's more about self-expression than it is really about like, you know, you're most beautiful when your nose is at this width and your cheekbones are like this. It's more about like, what do I want to look like today?
Was that name a tough sell? Like when you were, you know, shopping it around? Like Urban Decay.
You would think it's a tough sell, but I walked into, at the time, you know, Nordstrom. It was bought regionally. And I walked into the San Diego buying office and the way I got the San Diego buying office is a whole nother interesting story. But I walked in there and I really thought I was going to have to pitch this woman. I had been in an ad agency, so I knew, like, here's how you pitch, right? I'm like, pitch my idea. And she just wrote out an order form and started writing an order. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I knew, one, we were onto something. It was speaking to people. And two, like, how the hell am I going to make all this stuff? Like, she's writing an order. Like, how am I going to make it? So I had, like, my little samples, but I didn't really know how to make it. And I was trying to do grassroots marketing. I was calling all of these girl singers, like Gwen Stefani and Shirley Manson from Garbage. And I was tracking
them. Shirley.
Yeah.
We love her.
I love Shirley, right? Mm-hmm. And I was tracking her down where she was recording her album, you know, recording with Garbage in Minneapolis, some random studio. And I got her on the phone and I'm like, I want to send you this nail polish. And she was like, I'd love to get nail polish. Mm-hmm. You know, this was before that cult of celebrity was so huge.
Yeah, they're not like piles of vans full of
product, you know? So it was a really interesting early time. And it was really fun to be in the industry then and just sort of be starting it. I mean, I had a slimy paper fax machine at the beginning that I bought from a secondhand store.
Faxes.
This
is the portion of the podcast where we fangirl out big time. I remember, like, I wasn't really a beauty girl, but I remember when I saw Urban Decay the first time, because I consider myself like a tomboy, I was like, finally someone gets me. Like, you could be a tomboy, but still want to collect and wear makeup. And it had all these weird colors that no other brand had. Did you have trouble, once it was out there, yeah, you got it sold to the retailers, did customers get it right away?
We had so much fan love, like you're describing. I think, and our first tagline was, does pink make you puke? Which yes, then I immediately like spoke to.
You remember that ad? Yeah. It was like a sewer or something.
It wasn't a sewer, but it was very dark for a makeup ad. And you couldn't really see the makeup that
does
well.
Does pink
it was
make
just,
you puke?
It was really
funny.
But at the time, I mean, if you go back in time, at the time, you know, it was just department stores. And it was all really like pink and beige and red. And that was your choices if you wanted nice quality makeup. So it really spoke to these women that were like, we're makeup junkies, but we don't want to just look like, you know, a housewife. We want to look really edgy and cool. So that's why Does Pink Make You Puke spoke to so many people.
Yeah. You've touched on this before, but one of like the most memorable like 90s beauty moments for me was I was obsessed with one of the lipsticks that you launched, Gash. And then I remember reading in People magazine, Gwen Stefani was there, and I was obsessed with her too, of course.
Right.
Of course. It was the 90s, of course. And she said, like, I live for, you know, Gash lipstick. And I was thinking, like, how did you track her down, which you've already talked about? But you also developed, like, how did that relationship start? But your relationship with her has gone on for years and years, like, so much that she developed, like, this huge collection for you last year. Like, how is that, like, give me the backstory.
So the backstory with Gwen is pretty interesting. I remember having MTV on. MTV.
When there was music.
When there was music. And seeing that I'm Just a Girl video. Yeah. And thinking to myself, that's the Urban Decay girl right there. Yeah. And of course, Gwen's star just shot through the stratosphere. But I was lucky enough to connect with her manager and her costume designer and be able to sort of feed her product in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really, really took off. And so, you know, there were moments when I'd see her, like I got to go watch her perform at Saturday Night Live, but she was really sort of, for me, from a business finance standpoint, kind of became untouchable for a while. You know, I couldn't pay what you would have to pay a Gwen Stefani. And so it was
Was she like the muse, sort of, like in your head for Urban
Decay?
At
the beginning, for sure, she was the muse. And I think that her whole sort of vibe of just I'm cool but I'm really nice is always been kind of what I try to embody with Urban Decay is like kind of it's a really cool brand but it's really like filled with nice people, like we'll give you good makeup advice, like we're not above taking you by the hand and helping you out, like, oh, you want to know how I got this wing liner, I'll show you, you know, it's right. not a secret, I'm not going to keep it a mystery, like I'm going to help you learn how to do it too, like I want everyone in the club.
Yeah.
And I felt like she really kind of did embody that. Mm-hmm. I don't think she was this untouchable. She was cool, but I felt like she was always really, like every show I ever saw with her, she was great with her fans. And she was really inviting people into her world. So in that way, yes, she was very much a muse. And it was really exciting to get to a place where I could reconnect with her from a business standpoint and finally do a collection with her because it really, the whole thing, it was at 20 years and the whole thing became full circle. And
yeah.
You know, it was really gratifying.
Is Firebird one of hers?
Firebird is one
I'm
of hers.
I'm wearing that right now.
I love that color.
Oh, yeah. And that was a movie, you know, she wanted to do like the classic Gwen reds, but Firebird was one she felt very passionate about because she was starting to wear some like different more pinky shades and that she loved that kind of blue shift in it. Like the thing about Gwen with the lipsticks, we did 8 lipsticks with her and we sat down at a, we did a video session together, you know, a video shoot together. And at the end, I was like, oh, maybe you could try on a few lipsticks. And she's like, yeah. And her manager was like, oh, but you know, we've got like 20 minutes and then we got to go. And I swear the woman tried on, I was like, can you try on more and more, more, more? She tried on 40 lipsticks.
What's her trick? Like, what was her quick trick?
She would just try it on and she knew. Like, yeah, they stick. Yeah. But, you know, we had wipes. Yeah. But I just mean, you know, after you've put on like six lipsticks, usually your lips are raw.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just mean the girl is pro. Yeah. She was willing to. She is down. And she, you could tell she was in the moment. She was loving it. It wasn't like, oh, let me just knock this out. Yeah, she was like having so much fun trying on just tiny, minute versions of red. And she's got a great eye for color and really saw all the little differences in the different reds. And, you know, her manager's like, okay, we got to go. And she's like, no, no, no. Call him and tell him, like, 30 more minutes.
Yeah. So you found your girl.
Yeah. She's just really, you know, she's definitely a beauty junkie. And, you know, she's a good person.
You mentioned it's been 20 years. And what's crazy about your brand is it started out independently owned. You sold, not you sold it, but the company was sold to LVMH. Then, it was sold to
private equity.
Yeah. Then, at some point, L'Oreal, right? Right. Yet you're still here as the creative head through all of that, which is kind of unheard of. Has that been a choice that you've worked on hard or luck, or how are you still
Urban Decay? How am I still here? Well, I think, you know, they let me stay as long as I send, as long as I make money for people, they get to stay. I get to stay. Is that a good answer? I don't know.
The answer is because you're good at what you do, I guess.
And you want to stay. Yeah. And you want to be involved. No, a lot of people might just walk away.
Yeah, but I love this business. And for me, we have a lot of employees now, and I feel like I have a responsibility to kind of keep the thing going and keep the energy behind it and keep the vision, because there are a lot of people that have their lives invested into it and put their heart and soul into it, and so I'm there for them too. Mm-hmm. You know, that to me is the thing I have to say I'm possibly most proud of, is that I look at people that, you know, some of them have been with me a really long time, and they, like, you know, have a nice lifestyle because of this brand. Like, yeah. It's not just a thing that
I did for myself, but there are people
that, like, make a living and raise children and buy houses, and they do it because of what we do.
Yeah.
And
it's not just about the product for you.
It is about the brand and the product, but there is more to it. There's that human element of it. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, you can be super passionate about lipstick, but at the end of the day, you got to feed your kids, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that people make good money and have benefits and all of those things that people want in their lives, and there's a lot of people now that you know, make a living at Urban Decay. It makes me super proud of that.
Since you launched, I mean, the brand has gone through so many different kind of iterations. You have so many different product, assortment changes. How do you think the girl has changed, if she has at all? The girl's complexion. Yeah. I feel like she has to have, because I know, you know, when Jen and I went up to the counter when it first launched, the world was different.
The world was different, and I think...
And your assortment was different, of course. You only had lipsticks and nail polishes.
And you know, I tell this story. I remember going up to the display at Sephora one time and thinking, gosh, if I just had the budget, I'd change this and this. And this was very much in the early days. This and this, and then the thing would be done. And then it hit me as soon as I thought that, oh, my God, it's never done. And it was really a revelation that this is not a destination. It's really a journey. And the journey is, for us, it's all about constant evolution. So my goal is to keep you guys interested, even though you're, you know, early fans of the brand, and to also introduce the brand to new people and make it really relevant for the young woman today that's discovering prestige makeup for the first time. Mm-hmm. Because we try to keep a thread, right? The thread is, like, it's beauty with an edge, and everything we do is feminine. It's a little bit dangerous, and I always say fun, because we never try to take ourselves too seriously. It's makeup. You wash it off at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So as long as you infuse everything you do with that, the packaging can change, the photography can change, everything can change, but it still remains and feels Urban Decay, and I think that's a big part of what I do, is try to keep it consistent and evolve it, always keep it fresh, always keep it different.
But is the customer different?
I think
besides the fact that she's, like, you know, not, like, she's younger now than,
she's,
you know,
not that young, interestingly. She's, you know, over 25 for the most part. But we do know that our customer has grown up with us. So we have these customers that are, you know, pushing 40, a little bit over 40, and they're that hot mom. You know, that's mm-hmm. the cougar mom that wants, she doesn't want to give up like the fact
that
she.
Is there a MILF shade? There should be a MILF Urban Ooh, Decay shade.
Wait, why are you looking so knowing?
I'm not rolling my eyes. No, I love like that idea. I always want to name something MILF and then I get worried, you know, lawyers don't like those kinds of things. So.
Can we go get around it some other
way? Yes, we have to. We have to get around it.
Yeah. I feel, oh, this is fun.
You need like a MILF palette, right?
I know. I always wonder what the like. The naming sessions are like.
The naming sessions are super fun. The naming sessions.
Do they involve alcohol?
They sometimes. Sometimes like they involve like a rosé champagne, which is sort of keep it classy. One of my favorite things to drink too, and name too. Sometimes, so we keep a library of shade names. So if you come and I have one person on my team that collects them. She's the name collector.
What is that job title?
The keeper of the name.
No, she does other things too. Okay. She does other things too. But I'll be driving down the driving and I'll hear something or see something or whatever. So a name hits me and at the next light, I like text her and I don't have to say anything like check this shade name. Is it in our library or anything? I just text her like pandemonium. And then all of a sudden, she'll know. She just knows. She gets weird, random words shot at her via text. And she knows that there are shade names for me. We also have shade naming sessions, the whole goal is to go deep into the gutter. Like as deep and far into, like no holds barred. Say whatever you want to say.
No judgments.
Is
HR there?
They are not there. And, there have been moments where I'm like, shit, I could really, I just swore, sorry.
It's fine.
I could get in trouble from HR for this session right now, but.
Oh my gosh, I'm remembering.
You're still making money.
Still making money. So anyway, so we go deep into the gutter and then we just slowly pull it back to get it to where it could be, you know.
Right. I'm remembering, she had like a white eyeliner at one point and it had this name. And you were doing death sides, and I was like, oh, I know what that name is actually a reference to. And you were like, you're the only beauty editor that knows
what was it?
It was like... Yayo. Yeah. There's all kinds of drug names in there.
But I wonder, like, is there any shade name you wish you could have done that, like, it got nixed that you can tell us about?
I'm trying to think.
Or better yet, even a product. Like, was there ever a product that just never really worked out that you wish you could have done that, like...
Well, there's all kinds of products that never really, that never really get that traction, that they're not the ones people talk about. What's interesting is, like, all over face palettes don't really work.
But, like one that has, like one that has a little bit of everything. The cheek and all that?
You think, like, everybody's like, oh, I just want that one palette, perfect palette for my gym bag, and I can just, like, have...
Why is it? Is there always, like, an offending product in there? Or
no,
is just,
I just
like,
think people want what they want. And they want, like, different...
It's true. I always want an eye palette or a highlighter cheek palette. Like, I don't want them mixed in.
I like things that have, like an eye and a lip. Like a duo.
That's hard to do, though, because people don't really like a panned lip, generally. I think they like a panned lip to experiment with, like, oh, I want to try 10 shades of lip. Mm. But they don't really want, like,
panned... because you can brush in it. And
yeah.
True.
It's not really, like... the lipstick go. So there's some issues. And then loose shadow. You'd think that beauty junkie would want that stuff because it's so much more intense, but no, it doesn't work.
You ruin your carpet.
You ruin everything.
Yeah.
It gets everywhere.
When you launched, you were like the first person to have, like a gorgeous black lipstick, like, a crazy purple eyeliner. But now lots of people have that, like, as we know. So how are you, setting yourself apart?
Well, I think we like to always try new things.
That's
got to
be a bit scary when everyone started coming out.
It's not really scary. I feel like if you do something well, people are going to copy you. The great thing is we have a lot of momentum. We have a lot of customers that love us. And I think we have spent a lot of time creating great products. So people know that if they buy our product, it's going to be great quality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, really where we put a lot of stock into making really beautiful product that performs really well. The performance is always key to me.
Yeah.
And I road test everything. Everyone finds it funny that I live in Newport Beach, but I promise everyone who's listening, I jump in the ocean with everything on my face to see what happens to it. Yes.
Is your philosophy, that's interesting, is your philosophy like, just gonna keep blinders on, like stay in your lane? Like you're not somebody who gets distracted by like, oh, like he's doing this, she's doing this.
Like CC creams, EE creams. We got to do the next big K-beauty trend.
I don't really get involved. I do get excited about formulas. So if I start to see things, and I work with a lot of labs all around the world, and if I start to see formulas that are really interesting and innovative, like that's what gets me excited and developing things. And down that road. And sometimes it does dovetail with the trend, mm-hmm. which is fine. And sometimes mm-hmm. it doesn't, which is also fine. Yeah. I'm not really wrapped up in following as many trends as possible. Sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't.
So speaking of trends, a big one in the last couple of years is the vlogger, the rise of the right. vlogger, who a lot of these men and women that do the makeup videos love your brand. But how has that affected Urban Decay? Do you seek out those people, or does it affect sales negatively or positively? Yeah. So what do you think of their faces?
I like a lot of them personally, you know.
I did a big campaign recently for the lipsticks with like a whole bunch of like vloggers too.
Yes. So we did, we did 100 Shades of Ice, and each one got a shade. I have to say a few things about vloggers and bloggers and Instagram stars and makeup. I'm grateful every single day for them, because mm-hmm. I remember coming here to New York back in the day when I first started, and knocking on the door of magazines and meeting with beauty editors, and everyone looking at me with my makeup on like it is right now, looking at me like I was batshit crazy, like the crazy makeup lady.
Are some of these editors still working today?
Not many, no.
Because we can talk to them, we can find them.
Yeah, but most of them didn't wear makeup, you know, just like, oh, here comes the crazy makeup lady.
They don't. It's very weird.
So, until 5 years ago, I probably could not have sold a color corrector. I love color corrector. I used it all the time, but I couldn't have sold it to a regular customer until all of these vloggers and YouTube stars showed people how to do it. So I'm really grateful for them, because I feel like I'm talking to my people now. Like, I'm talking to these women that are also like me, makeup junkies, and understand. So when I have a conversation with one of these people, like, we're on the same level. Like, yeah. What do you like? What do you not like? Why do you like that one? You know, and I feel like I can have an honest conversation with someone who really does use makeup. And I think it's been very democratic for the beauty customer. It's not about the package that the photo editor wants to shoot. It's about, for them, they're recommending stuff that works, whether it's in an ugly package or not.
One of the reasons I think it's so popular is the color and the pigment and the vlog. Your products show up on camera, but then there's Naked, right. Which I have to ask about, because it's just like the biggest phenomenon. Your Naked palettes are crazy. And to me, when I first saw them, I was like, oh, that's weird, because I don't think of you for neutrals, but now you freaking own them. So how did that come about? Was that like on purpose? You were thinking we should do neutrals? I know you always had them single pan. But
no, we always had them single pan, because obviously, even if you're wearing crazy eye makeup, you still need a neutral here or there to highlight mm-hmm. or create a shadow. But the way it started was, when I travel, I always said, okay, I'm going to wear this makeup with this outfit and this makeup with this outfit, but I need these four neutrals to always go with me. Wouldn't it be great if I had a palette of those four neutrals? So I asked a couple of people that I work with very closely and trust their makeup opinion, like, hey, if you were stuck on a desert island, what would be the four neutral shades you would bring with you? So they brought them, they you know, pulled them out of their handbag or their makeup drawer or whatever, brought them in. We threw them all out on the table, and it actually made this amazing palette. I think we had one dupe, and we had one where we felt like, oh my gosh, there's a hole here that needs like this fawny, grayish beige color that we created in a matte. But the rest of it became the Naked palette. And that really is kind of the story.
Do you think it was the name that like made it popular?
Well, I think the name made it popular. I think what it did was it took neutrals and it created an edge to neutrals. Sure. So it was this palette where you could take it and you had a day look, you had a date night look, you had a super evening going out smoky look. You could create anything with that eye palette and feel like you could just throw that in your bag and leave. And I think that was one level of appeal. I think the fact that it was called Naked made neutrals not feel so boring. It felt a little sexier and a little naughtier. And I think they blend really well and work.
And so you've gotten a lot of mileage out of it with all the extensions. So how many more do you think you have up your sleeve?
Well, we just launched Ultimate Basics, and I think people always want more naked, and we have fun creating them. So we have a new one coming next year.
I have 25.
I'm probably not supposed to say that, right? The PR.
I'm looking at the PR space.
Naked to the nth power.
I can't tell you what it is. It will be surprising.
Yeah.
I have so many like brown eyeshadows that are all within like one gradation of one another, but like I need them all. So I understand like why you guys keep on, you know, rolling these out. Which Urban Decay product is your personal all-time favorite?
Ooh. This is hard because...
Guys, get out your wallets, your checkbooks, your credit cards.
You're asking me to, like... It's hard to pick between face, lip, eye,
okay,
cheek.
Do you want me to give you a category?
Okay, give me a category.
Okay, can we play... Can we do two?
Okay.
Okay, all right. We'll start with eyes.
So my favorite product is the eyeshadow I'm wearing, Zodiac. Eyeshadow. I love it. It's one of our moon dust shadows, and you can use it wet or dry. And
how would you describe that color?
Yeah.
To our listeners? Is smoky in the base, but it's got this incredible sparkle that's bluish greenish, kind of like a beetle.
I was thinking I was going to say green, but I didn't know. Is it blue? Yeah. It's beautiful.
It's more greenish, for
Or
sure.
a scarab, as we call a them scarab. In magazines.
That's right. A scarab.
Yes, we just recently changed beetle to scarab in some copy because it felt much more chic.
Yes.
Much more chic.
Yes, I feel like I'm on vacation or like going back in time. Okay, and then for lips.
Okay, I'm wearing all my favorites today. So I love this lip shade. It's called After Dark, and I love it because it is bright enough to brighten your face and show up in a picture, which I had taken today. And it is deep enough where you can wear it out at night. And I think it's a little bit edgy, but still really pretty. So I think it like kind of walks that perfect balance for my complexion.
Yeah, it has like a bit of purple in it that makes it a little edgy, but it's not like, look at that purple lipstick.
And it's not so dark that I feel like it's so dark.
No, it's like
and
a
I
nice
like that look sometimes,
balance.
But yeah.
For sure. Which product do you feel is the most underrated of your line? Like that, not that you're like hanging out at Sephora, like showing people like, guys, what about this? But if you could, like,
what if you were at Sephora and Wendy was like next to her gondola, just being like, how about this one?
Yeah, let's say, let's play a game. Let's say you were at Sephora and you're like a blind shopper and you are just watching people at the Urban like kiosk gondola.
What do you point them
like,
to?
Which would you be like,
I do
like,
this
guys,
sometimes. You guys are laughing, but I do it. I do it sometimes.
Do people recognize you?
Well, it depends on where I am, but sometime now they've been starting to recognize me. So I tried to do it in California the other day, and I walked into an Ulta, and I was going over to the gondola, and the manager, like, says as I'm walking behind me, and I've got my little boy with me, trying to look like just any random person, and she's like, I don't know why you walk in here and act like we don't know who you are.
That's amazing.
Well, good. She's doing her job.
She is. Yeah. She called me out. But I do, like, sometimes walk into stores and just start selling people things.
That's cool.
They're like, oh, do you work here? I'm like, yeah, I do.
Well, what do you push them to?
So what
like,
I push
what's
them
not
to,
getting the love that you
would,
feel it deserves?
I would tell you that it actually gets a ton of love, but I think it is one of the best mascaras out there is our Perversion mascara.
Okay.
I think it's number 4 or 5 mascara on the market, but I actually think it's kind of amazing. It makes your lashes look lush and false.
I don't think I've ever tried it. The Fat Mascara Podcast.
So. We need to do a prestige
mascara.
Did you mascara.
Know we had a mascara called Big Fatty? Did you know that at one point?
Yes.
Yes.
Are there any brands right now that like you feel like are doing really cool, exciting things? Like,
even
could
if
you
it's
give
not
some
beauty? Like,
yeah.
Even if it's like,
yeah. Like, what's exciting you right now that give you those urban vibes that Jen and I felt?
The beauty brand I think is kind of interesting right now. I feel like is NYX. Mm-hmm. I love how they've sort of taken this whole idea of artistry and professional product and brought it to a mass level. Like, I think it's pretty genius.
Before you go, we talked about some of your favorite Urban Decay products, but what about like skin and hair? I know you make skin products as well, but like, what are some of the other products that you like to travel with and use?
Yeah, so we don't make that many skin products.
Right.
My basic skincare is all pretty much SkinCeuticals. I really love all those products. Mm-hmm. I use a lot of them and I feel like they're pretty effective. I also have a lady that does great, you know, lightweight lasers on me on kind of a regular basis. So
who's your laser lady? Let's give her a shout out.
Her name's Sylvia Ferris in Newport Beach. So, and then the other thing is I have people that smuggle retinol in, or not retinol, Retin-A in from Mexico for me. So I love that.
Why are they having to smuggle it?
Because, you know, it's like $300 a tube here if you buy it legit through your derm and go to the pharmacy if you don't, you know.
Right, because it's cosmetic. It's not covered by insurance.
Yeah, it's not covered by insurance. And then in Mexico, it's over the counter. So that same tube is $30. So I just, not really smuggling, but just bringing over.
It's her souvenir when she Retin-A. Goes to...
Yeah, it's my Mexican souvenir. So Retin-A is a big part of my regimen. I think it does do a lot of great things with cell turnover and allows your other products to work better.
What about sunscreen? You're outside all the time.
I use a ton of sunscreen. I have this full layering system. Like if I go outside, if I'm playing volleyball or tennis, it's I definitely put on sunscreen, like a Shiseido, like 30 or 50, kind of 38 or 50, depending on how much time of year it is. And then I kind of let that sink in. And then I mix our one and done, which is SPF 20, with the Shiseido Shaker Foundation.
Oh, wow.
Mix those two together and put that on. Because the Shiseido on its own is a little heavy and cakey. But if you mix it with our one and done, it's a little bit more lightweight and glowy. Yes, it's a great hack. I put that on. And then I use the Shiseido powder.
Oh, you are light.
Oh, no, I'm full.
There's no rays getting through.
No, there's no rays getting through. I use the Shiseido powder in two shades because if you use it in one shade, your face looks really flat and non-dimensional. And it's not really about contouring, but it really will look kind of creepy flat just because you've layered all this like stuff on. So you actually have to create a little cheekbone with a little bit of a darker shade and a lighter shade.
With that sunscreen powder they have.
With the sunscreen powder they have. And then I blast it all pretty heavy with our setting spray so it won't move.
Oh, that's your reviving
it's our own,
that,
our
right?
all-nighter setting spray. Yeah. Oh, and then you just kind of, then that keeps everything in place. And then I can play volleyball for like 3 hours.
Sunscreen.
I never thought about that ever.
It's really.
I like that chill setting spray.
The chill setting spray.
The chill one, I like that one. I prefer that one. What is going on with the hair? What are you doing with the hair?
So I use a couple of different products. I have. So I'm friends with Allie from Dry Bar.
But I've been to Dry Bar many times.
So she has a product I love called Triple Sec.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good. It's like dry shampoo, volumizer, and beachy wavy stuff all in one spray. And I love that. And then she also just released a detox dry conditioner, which that's my thing is like sometimes the ends get dry and packed up looking.
Oh, do you have combination hair?
I do have combination hair.
Oily at the roots, dry at the ends.
And so L'Oreal Paris branded this combination hair. I don't know if they didn't actually trademark it.
But
no. They didn't brand it, but they introduced this idea and Jen and I can't get over it. Combination hair.
Yeah.
It's so genius.
It is genius.
Oily roots, dry ends.
Dry in.
So you use the dry.
So I use the dry conditioning spray to like hit the end so they just look a little more lively and moisturized. And then she has this stuff called the Chaser.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like pomade that's not too heavy. It won't make you look greasy, but it just pieces it out and separates it a little bit. So I feel like with those three things, they can kind of pull it all together.
I think you're pulling
the other one I really do love, though, when I just let my hair just dry, like naturally, is I have to say though. The new Oribe, what is it called? The Matte Waves Texture Lotion.
Mm.
That stuff is good.
Because you have like a nice wave to your
hair. I have
hair.
A nice wave and it just kind of brings it out a little more, grunges it out a little more for my rebellious side, you know.
What's happening with your nails?
Oh,
I like
nails,
like
that's
you have
right.
this like glittery accent now.
So I was talking about my nails. I have big nail issues. I used to be able to wear nail polish, but my nails just keep getting thinner and more sad and dry. And then I tried gel nails, and they just really beat them up because they're already thin, so you know they got to buff them down. If I wear nail polish, because they're thin, they flex with every single thing I touch, and so they crack and chip within hours. So I was like, I can't
that
even.
Might be why
here I
ship
am,
something.
Like the beauty person, and I can't even have my nails done. So. These are press-on nails.
Stop it.
And they are awesome. And
they don't look like press-on nails.
They don't damage your nails. They stay on for a week. I surfed in these. See, I took them out surfing.
Dasha
surfed
Polanco
in these.
Was
yes,
also
Dasha.
A press-on
you are
nail.
Our second guest with press-on nails.
And nobody guesses that they're press-on
Not,
nails.
No.
They look really good. They come pre... You don't have to do glue or anything. They come with a little tab, and they literally are press... They're called Impress, and I buy them on Amazon.
Good for you.
That is a tip. You are going out strong.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you so
on
much.
That boat.
Holy
this
cow,
so
this
fun.
Is awesome. Teenage dream realized.
Totally.
Okay, guys, it's 2017 and it's our first Raise a Wand, and you'll see not much has changed.
Meaning, are you about to bring out a peach lipstick or a candle?
it's time to break out a cozy candle because winter is still in full swing. And I'm still nesting, and I'll be coming out around April.
Okay, so what do you got for us?
But don't worry, this is probably the last one for a while because I can tell Jen is bored AF. Okay, it is the Bath and Body Works Hot Cocoa and Cream Candle. This thing is heavy like a doorstop. It is 3 wicks.
Hot cocoa and cream?
Yes. What? I love hot chocolate. I'm gonna.
It sounds like a stripper's name or something.
No, I didn't think of it like that. Your mind's in the gutter, Jen.
Sorry.
This is, I've been burning it when I get out of the elevator. It smells like Willy Wonka's factory is down the hall.
Really?
It's the most fragrant candle. If you're on a diet, don't even bring it near the home.
Because it makes you want to eat cookies or something?
It smells like melting chocolate. Not like artificial chocolate or kind of... It smells like melting chocolate, and like there's a chocolate fountain.
And that's what you want your house to smell like?
Yep.
Okay, so that's a good one.
And what's yours?
You can make fun of it too. I have Sephora Pro Dimensional Highlighting Palette.
Oh, there's nothing funny about that. I saw that.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I was freaking out.
Okay.
Oh my God.
So it's a palette of 5 highlighters, but they're like this gel kind of texture, sort of like, you know, the Pat McGrath. It's like the gel side of the Pat McGrath.
The highlighter, yeah.
And there's a clear and a white shimmer.
Turn your skin on.
And they're amazing because you just look like dewy and glowy and sort of luminescent, but not in a glittery way. And there's like a warm one and a cool one. And I've just been feeling it. You saw it?
I love it. Yeah. The clear one's very intriguing.
Yes, it's called Lunar Glaze.
Ooh.
There's also Nova and Pulsar. Who names these things? Chromosphere? That's the really sparkly one. Anyway, it just came out at Sephora, and I think it's limited edition. So
run
and get highlighted and glow like a lunosphere. We mentioned a lot of products and people and places and brands and things in this episode. So I just want to put it out there. If you want to find out where any of those things are, go to fatmascara.com.
And you can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter and at Fat Mascara for both of those things. And you can also contact us directly by emailing us at info@fatmascara.com.
So profesh.
So profesh. Thanks for listening, guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.